I'm Dr. Leif Tapanilla from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Hey, our guest today is Jim Anglesey. He's the long-range planner for the city of Pocatello. Peter, we're talking about the concept of walkable cities. Do you ever walk?
Yes.
Do you live in a city?
Yes.
Wouldn't it be great if your city
was walkable?
Allowed you to walk in it?
Yeah. You know, and I think this is, it's a wonderful topic because a lot of times when we look at walkable cities, we might think of some of these larger metropolitans where you've got the people living in high-rise apartments and stuff, and it's just difficult to move vehicles around. But when we have a city like Pocatello, we're a little bit more spread out, but we can definitely make this and have this be a walkable city as well.
Right, and especially as we think about smaller regions within the city of having those little areas being walkable. It's not necessarily being able to walk from the south end of Pocatello all the way to the north end of Chubbuck or something.
No,
like that.
No.
But it's, right. So we'll dig into that. But Peter, I see that you brought some nature news.
I brought some nature news, Leif. You know, there are bats that migrate.
There are bats.
There are a handful in Europe, Africa, and North America. Idaho has two species that migrate. And, you know, due to the rarity of migrating bats, and the other problem is that they fly at night, not a whole lot is known about these migratory bats and their behaviors as they're flying.
I bet you're about to tell us.
Yes, I am. Totally. So we've got some researchers out of Germany who have developed a novel sensor technology that they attach to 71 common Nachtel bats. These are some European bats.
They put a thing on the bat?
They put a thing on the bat, okay. Yep. And these bats are known to migrate up to 1,600 kilometers, which is almost 1,000 miles.
Wow.
In a year. Yeah. And they can fly nearly 400 kilometers a night across Europe.
A night. What?
Yeah. It's really kind of impressive.
That's really fun.
And here's the other thing. So bats, unlike birds, where birds will prepare for migration, they'll eat a lot of food.
Yeah, they'll bulk up.
They'll bulk up. Bats can't do that. So when they migrate, they don't migrate every single night. They migrate in stages. They'll travel, you know, up to 400 kilometers, and then they'll kind of wait and feed for a night or two and then move on again. Well, and this is really kind of cool, during their research and as they were viewing the data that they were collecting, they noticed that on certain nights, there was an explosion of bat migrations where, I mean, it'd be like fireworks going off, and they're trying to figure out what these bats were doing and why all of a sudden on certain nights that all of them just took off at once.
Was it the bat signal?
It was close. it was close. What they found is that these bats were actually riding warm tailwinds at the front of storms.
Oh, cool.
So as these big storm systems would come in, you know, it's pushing the warm air in front of them and you've got more wind.
Right.
The pressure changes and these bats would just basically take flight.
They recognize probably the pressure change.
Yep. Yep. And they've got it where they can travel longer distances with less energy. They were basically surfing on the storm fronts.
That's so cool. I love that.
Yeah.
That's smart.
Bat smarts.
That's the bat signal.
That's the bat signal, yeah.
It's barometric pressure. Clever. Today, we're talking walkable cities, and our trivia question relates. So, according to walkscore.com, in 2021, what city was ranked the highest as the most walkable city in the United States? Well, when we come back from our break, we're going to be joined by Jim Anglesey, and we're going to talk about walkable cities, and we're also going to get the answer to that question. So stick around. Stay tuned.
This is KISU-FM Pocatello, Idaho Falls, Rexburg. Also available on your Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command, play KISU.
Hey, welcome back from the break. Our guest today is Jim Anglesey. He's the long-range planner for the city of Pocatello. So first off, welcome to The Nature of Idaho.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is you do.
I was born and raised in Pocatello, and so I'm glad to be working here to help plan our city. I have a degree in planning and landscape architecture, and so I love thinking about the design and form of a city and how it evolves under the idea that cities are never finished. They're evolving all the time. But yeah, as a long-range planner, I oversee the vision for growth and development in the city of Pocatello and help the citizens get their ideas of what they like to see and mesh that together with common planning practices and put that into plans so that the city has something that they can look at and see, this is what the public wants. These are the best practices. And these are the goals and strategies that kind of marry those two together so that we have something to use and move forward and how we like to see our city grow.
So when we look at long range planning, I think sometimes people just think about the new stuff, but you're not just focused in on new areas and growth. You also look at what we already have existing within the city of Pocatello and how we can combine some of our historic areas or older areas and include those into new growth and making us, you know, do you call it a more efficient city?
Yeah, absolutely. Long-range planning isn't just about suburban areas or malls. It's about our traditional downtowns as well, especially historic buildings. You could look into the history of cities and the patterns of how we develop, but really inherently our older historic areas of town are more walkable, whether it was out of necessity because of pre-car. And that's really what drove that, what we now call walkability, is because people needed to get places by foot. But now that desire for walkability is really coming back, and it's been about 30 years in the making of the renaissance of walking.
Just in our town, in Pocatello, I think there's several distinct regions within our town that have different qualities to them, which have historic origins, right? The old town, more grid-like arrangement, and probably we'll get into what walkability qualities there are to that. But contrasting that with different neighborhoods that have been added on in subsequent decades, right, from the core to more spread out suburbs, if we want to call it that, where you are designing it for car travel. There's some benefits to that, but if we're talking about the quality of walkability, especially between those areas, pretty far apart. And yeah. So why don't you lead us into what makes a city or regions of a city more walkable or less walkable? How do you characterize that?
Walkability, in essence, is being able to get to places that meet your daily needs within an efficient distance. Planners characteristically within the industry say that a quarter mile or a 5 to 10 minute walk is what walkability is. So can you get to a grocery store on foot? Can you get to a park on foot? Can you get to healthcare on foot within a 5 to 10 minute walk from your home? That's how kind of we measure what walkability is. And so we take those, where do people live? Where are the parks? Where are the grocery stores? And that's how we determine if a neighborhood or a downtown is walkable or not.
Do you also consider like the pathways of walking, not just distance, but like some stretches of road might have lots of traffic on them of cars and it doesn't feel very safe or comfortable as a walker, a pedestrian. Is that part of the equation?
Yeah, absolutely. Part of walkability is the pedestrian's experience.
Right.
Take, for example, in Pocatello, Yellowstone Avenue versus, say, 7th Avenue in the college neighborhood.
Right.
They're two different, totally different environments. And if you had the choice between the two, you obviously know what road you want to walk along. And so part of walkability and efforts to make places more walkable is mitigating those areas that may not be pleasant to walk on to improve the desire for people to walk along those streets. But also the patterns of the street network is really important too. If you take, you know, our more traditional historic core with the grid versus suburban neighborhoods that may have cul-de-sacs and collector roads and all that, you may have to walk a mile to get just on the other side of the block.
Right.
Versus in your traditional neighborhoods, it takes a matter of minutes to travel the same distance.
Yeah, I like that topic. I was watching a person talk about how roads have been designed. And the roads have been designed very specifically for vehicles and vehicles in mind. That doesn't make a very good or safe walkable path for pedestrians. You know, I kind of look at Yellowstone, where you look at where the sidewalks are and you're right there next to the street, or there's nothing really to look at. There's not a comfort buffer zone and all that. And so when we look at walkability, you know, we do have to look at how streets are designed and developed.
And really, I think to Pocatello's benefit, the whole core of the city is built traditionally. And you do have those buffer areas, unless we've altered them. But traditionally, you have a row of trees along the street and then the sidewalk. And so you have that buffer between automobile use and pedestrian corridors.
That makes sense. So why is it valuable? What's the point of making a city more walkable or less walkable? Because, come on, most people have access to a vehicle. And so are we trying to return back to a time where we didn't have cars? Or, you know, what's the point?
I would say the point is quality of life, really, because you just look back into history and see kind of the evolution of cities.
Yeah.
And you can see what happens when you cater cities to cars. That walkability increases health. I don't have any studies here available for you to kind of look at, but the areas in any city that are traditionally built and are a mix of use, so people live, work, shop, play, all in the same place, people's quality of life increases. We could get into all these different topics, health, the environment, even the economy, all it improves when a place is walkable.
Yeah, I just think about the social interaction, because when you're in your car, you're isolated.
Yep.
And when you live in a walkable area within your city, people are using the sidewalks. You're talking to your neighbors. As you're walking, you might meet a friend or develop a new friend. And so I think that not just the health of actually doing something physical.
Right. This is social fabric.
There's a social fabric behind it. And being able to, you know, the community meet for an event at a local park or one of their historic downtown areas, I think that is a huge component when we look at the health of a city or a community. I think walkability, it encompasses so many aspects of it.
As humans, we are social creatures. The past 70, 75 years, 80 years of post-war development and catering our cities to cars really flies in the face of what our nature is as humans. We want to interact. Even a introvert like myself sees the value in that, because it's in our nature that we need to interact with people, and having cities catered to cars. You could keep going off into, you know, all these things that create isolation. It's no wonder why we have a mental health epidemic in this country. It can stem back to the way we plan and develop our cities.
You've done a recent analysis for the city of Pocatello in terms of its walkability in different regions?
Yeah, within the city, back in 2023, we completed the city's general or comprehensive plan. And one of those maps or analysis within that plan is what areas of the city is walkable. And we determined that based off of proximity to a park, proximity to a school, proximity to a grocery store, and proximity to health services, and even transportation stops.
Right.
Put those all together within a quarter mile walk, and it will spit out kind of this heat map of what areas are walkable within the town.
What did you guys find?
Downtown is number one.
Yeah.
You've got little pockets, especially like around schools. The city has a good network of parks. But the analysis is really built on point systems. So if these quarter mile rings within all these amenities overlap on the map, they get points.
Right.
And so if there's a presence of a school, 1 point, presence of a park, 2 points. So I'll have to share that map with you for the show.
Yeah, we can share it. We can link it on there.
But the outcome is these are the areas, these dark green areas are the places that have multiple of these pieces of the puzzle that determine walkability.
So the question is, does Pocatello have the bone structure to be a highly walkable city?
Absolutely. When the city was first established, it was created in this grid in relation to the railroad, and we call it the original town site. That area out of anywhere in the city is highly walkable just based off the bones. If you look at the map and there's areas within the original town site that aren't walkable, it's because those different amenities are missing. It's the intention of the comprehensive plan to say, these are the areas that maybe need a park or maybe need a grocery store to improve that walkability within those areas.
Well, and I think of healthcare as well. When you mentioned that as an amenity, that might be a clinic. Is mm-hmm. that right? Or yep. Is that like a pharmacy as
urgent
well?
Care, urgent care, hospital, clinic. Okay. Yep.
Thinking in the future how we could modify things or add to different areas within the town and make those regions a little bit more walkable. How much can the city plan for that, and how much of that is change that happens sort of organically as owners of land change? How much can the city really do, or is it really a long-term kind of wait and have a plan?
It's kind of both. As planners, our job is to oversee orderly growth as opposed to unchecked growth, you know, which could go any way.
Sure.
There are cities in the country that do have that approach of unchecked growth, and you can see the outcome. A lot of times it's auto-oriented. A lot of times it's lower density, and a lot of times it bankrupts cities. And so the orderly growth is, let's set up the environment that helps us create a better city, that helps us improve our economy. We don't want to overregulate, but we don't want to underregulate. So it's that challenge of finding where the middle ground is to create this environment for good growth.
Right.
So, Jim, do you have some examples for us of walkable cities, of areas that did a fairly good job at maintaining and creating walkable spaces?
It depends on if you want to look at, was it walkable or is it walkable? You know, if you look into history, I would say Pocatello was walkable at one point. And it really comes down to what cities, if they're going to maintain their walkability, mm-hmm. what cities focus on traditional development as opposed to post-war auto-oriented suburban development. That traditional development talks about vertical growth. It talks about higher density, and not so much because we want skyscrapers in Pocatello, but because that density improves walkability. You mix your land uses, that improves walkability because people don't have to drive so far. When you separate commercial over here and residential over here, you give them the opportunity to mix and that walkability increases. And so you could talk about large cities that have maintained walkability like New York. And really that's because a lot of times it's what their topography is mm-hmm. and they're really forced to go up because of their limited topography. We kind of have the same situation here, honestly, but it's just the opposite way. We have mountains surrounding us. A lot of times that's why people may be critical saying that Pocatello is not growing. Well, if you look at the conventional development, suburban development, that's why we don't have anywhere to do that.
Right.
Other than, you know, if you go to Chubbuck or if you go to Idaho Falls, they have the ability to practice unchecked growth in a way that a lot of other cities that don't have that topography constraint.
For those of us that have lived in Pocatello for a while, I've been here almost 20 years, we've kind of seen some addition to, you know, there's some new neighborhoods that have opened up certainly in the last 20, more in the northern direction, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe a little bit of building up the topography, up the hillsides a little bit. Speak to us a little bit about how you, as a city, rejuvenate parts of the older town, not necessarily just old town, but older parts of the town that maybe have changed in terms of whether it's residential, commercial, unoccupied residential. How do you modify that over time with a mindset of making it more livable, walkable, and higher quality of life for people that live there.
That's a challenge, especially areas that have already been developed. One of the things we look at is, especially in the core of the city where it's already been developed, it has an identity. Take for like the college neighborhood, for example, it has an identity. Most people that live here know where it's at, and they love it because it's walkable, has street trees, has character as far as architecture goes. And so we have to be careful that we don't want to change that if it's desirable and traditionally built. We want to be able to replicate that and also infuse increased density to accommodate growth and encourage walkability. And so I guess there's a lot to that question. because
that's why you're the long-range city planner. It takes a while to answer.
Yeah. There's so many little things that go into it, especially when we're talking about growing inward. And that's really what the comprehensive plan for the city calls for, is instead of focusing on outward growth, we need to start focusing inward growth. Because eventually we're going to run out of space. We want to get in front of that demand and start increasing our development in the core. And in turn, that will increase livability, walkability, and not to mention a better economic outcome. And as for a city, a lot of times we look at what the tax base is, and you're going to get your tax base from increased density. In reality, your suburban development bankrupts your city. And so you really need to be focusing, if that's all that you care about is your taxes and an economy, you would want to increase your density and vertical growth in your core.
Yeah, I'm just thinking as cities sprawl, all I can think of is utilities and street development.
Right.
So as the city grows, especially out, the expense to actually incorporate them goes up exponentially compared to increasing density in an area that's already been developed.
You're adding new miles of utilities. First, that's the first cost. The second is to maintain it all.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the issues that we face is you create more infrastructure, that's more money you have to spend. And so the more, I guess, critical mass you produce, the more efficient your infrastructure can become because you're using less miles of it.
So part of the equation here in figuring out how to zone and how spread out or how more concentrated you're going to be, I mean, ultimately, there's economic arguments to be made. So help make the argument, the economic argument, for having green space and park space. On one hand, if I'm developing a whole new area, wouldn't it be smarter to have houses in all of those to generate more income on tax base? Why just leave it as a green open field where kids can go play?
Mm-hmm. It comes back to that quality of life.
Right.
Recreation is a $1 billion industry. And people crave that.
Yes.
In today's economy, businesses are relocating their people to places that have an outdoor scene. You look at over in Twin Falls, like the Cliff Bar Corporation, they're often touted as that type of business that brings people for the recreation. They located in Twin Falls because it had that identity as a recreation-based place. And so while open space is a public amenity, it directly impacts the economy because of that quality of life. People aren't just going to the mall anymore to just spend money at JCPenney. They want to have an experience and they want to be able to do it in a way that's beneficial for them in many different ways. And that includes being able to get out of your car and to recreate and to enjoy yourself. Take bringing back New York in the 70s and 80s when everybody hated New York is because it was a concrete jungle. And if you look at it now, you see that New York understands that and they've been infusing it with open space as many places as they can. You know, they don't have much space, but you go there and you look at the High Line, for example, which is a linear park utilizing an old elevated railway. You see rooftop gardens. Just because they are extremely dense, they still are capitalizing on that recreation and infusing it wherever they can. In Pocatello and in the West, we have those amenities that New York doesn't have, to where we have topography that is really not buildable, not developable, or at least it doesn't pay itself to be developed. And even in the core of the city, within 10 minutes, you're walking on a trail. And that's why people are drawn to places like Pocatello, is because they have that ability to get out quick.
That's great. Well, one last question here before our trivia questions. What can the public do to help drive this concept that it's important and valuable to them as citizens in our town? What is the individual to do to help promote that?
I think that, one, if you don't know why it's beneficial to walk, you should learn about it. Not just for yourself, but for, like you brought up, the social capital of our city, and the reasons why people choose to live in cities is to be around other people and to have opportunity. And there's so many resources online to learn about that. I think number two is to embrace growth. A lot of times we see growth as a negative, but to get involved and to be able to provide feedback on what you want your neighborhood to be, so that that growth can be done in a way that you want it to be. It doesn't have to be a high-rise apartment in your neighborhood. It doesn't have to be a boarding house in your neighborhood. It can be something that looks a lot like what you already have, but growth really is inevitable. It can either be unchecked growth that happens to us, or we can directly impact it by deciding how we want it to look, how we want it to feel. And I think that creating walkable neighborhoods in the long run is going to be beneficial for everybody.
That sounds unbelievably sensible. So right? I'm glad you're doing the job that you're doing.
Well, and the other thing too is, when you look at New York, as you said, as an example, there are so many clever ways to make a walkable city and make green space. So it's not necessarily about, well, we got to tear this up, we got to do this, we got to, you know, there are good, cost-effective ways to really improve the walkability within a city.
Mm-hmm. So help us with our trivia question. The question was, according to walkscore.com, in 2021, what city in the United States was ranked the most walkable city in the U.S.?
Surprisingly, it's San Francisco.
San Francisco. With all its mountains.
Yep.
It's still walkable.
Yep. I thought those are just hills.
Oh, they're hills.
Sir. Okay, gotcha. All right, Jim, thank you so much for joining us today. And to learn more about what Jim does within the city of Pocatello, please go to pocatello.gov. And honestly, if you're committed to the city of Pocatello and you really want to participate in the growth of Pocatello, you know, go there often, because there's many avenues to have your voice be heard within the city. So again, thank you so much, Jim.
Thank you.
The Nature of Idaho receives support from listener contributions to KISU-FM. Shows are produced at KISU-FM in Pocatello at Idaho State University, with editing and production by Shelby McGovern. Music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock. Audio of this and past episodes of The Nature of Idaho can be found at kisu.org or from Spotify and other select podcast services. Send your thoughts and suggestions to noid-kisu@isu.edu.